WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. What's the measure of a human life? Commentator Maureen Corrigan says that if the Social Security Administration is to be believed, much of her life can be measured in the low four figures.
My life flashed before my eyes last week, and it wasn't a pretty sight. No, I didn't have a near-death experience. I had a sobering brush with bureaucracy. I received one of those letters from the Social Security Administration notifying me that I've finally earned enough work credits to be eligible for benefits when I retire. My first reaction was gratitude. Good old Franklin Roosevelt, what a wonderful president he was for ensuring that we Americans will enjoy some measure of security in our old age. Then I looked at page 2 of the letter, which spelled out the monthly benefits I could expect to receive depending on when I retire. It's dispiriting to realize that in my twilight years, I'll be returning to the lifestyle I enjoyed as a young graduate student. Dinner most nights will once again be a box of macaroni and cheese, and I'll be eating it in the group house I'll no doubt be sharing with a bunch of other depressed people in the same situation. Except this time round, the line for the bathroom in the morning will move a lot more slowly. But that vision of the future wasn't even the grimmest thing about this letter. Far worse was the implied message that my country, the land of opportunity and optimism, had stopped believing in my potential to better myself. The letter said my projected retirement benefits were based on my current earnings. So tactfully, Social Security was informing me it thought I had topped out as a wage earner. How could this have happened to me? As the letter detailed, I've been working since junior high, and if the lasting payoff of all those jobs, especially the early ones I held in my working life, can't be calculated in dollars, what was their worth? That's when I looked at the chart entitled, Your Earnings Record at a Glance, and the Social Security ghost of jobs past escorted me on a journey back, back, to the land of the time card. 1971, the first year for which I've got a recorded salary, $327. That was probably for a series of summer temp jobs filing in offices. Just thinking about those jobs makes the seconds crawl by. I'd read Dickens' David Copperfield in junior high, and I remember identifying with all the grandiosity and earnestness of youth, with David's despair as he toiled in that infamous blacking factory. There were lots of soul-numbing jobs like that. Cashier at Cress's 5 and 10, grader for the Educational Testing Service, which was the closest I ever came to prostitution, even if it was only intellectual prostitution. Then there were other early jobs that are memorable because they crystallize a time, or for better or worse, they taught me what? Something. There was the job I had as a sales girl in the Husky Boys department at Macy's. It seared into my memory, not because of the job itself, but because of what I had to do to get it. The personnel officer told me when I applied that I didn't qualify as Macy's material because my face was too broken out. She said that if I came back the following week and my acne had cleared up, I'd be hired. So after a week of slathering on the Clearasil, I did go back to present my face for inspection and got the job. Ugh. There's all the humiliation of late adolescence wrapped up in that $1,951 windfall from 1977. My yearly total for 1978 reads zero, so I must have been paid under the table for my job as a camp counselor in the Catskills. That was my first intense multicultural experience. The place had formerly been an Orthodox Jewish camp, and the cooks still worked there, churning out daily meals of kasha and bananas and sour cream for the uncomprehending campers, who were all deaf, underprivileged Black and Hispanic kids. So maybe it's no wonder that given this haphazard work history, when I got to graduate school, I was attracted to the writings of the great 19th century English artist and socialist, William Morris. In his utopian fantasy, News from Nowhere, Morris envisioned a society without money, where everyone devoted themselves to work that engaged their minds and hearts. As somebody who's wound up teaching and writing for an underpaid living, I've been lucky enough to find that kind of work. The reward of labor is life, says one of Morris's characters in News from Nowhere. Is that not enough? According to this letter from Social Security, it looks like it's going to have to be.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. Coming up, singer-songwriter and guitarist Alex Chilton. As a teenager, he sang lead on the hits The Letter and Cry Like a Baby. Now he's revered for his own songs. This is Fresh Air.